Parshas Noach, as we know, is about the rapid deterioration of the world after the creation. Asara Dairis mi Adam ad Noach, 10 generations that went from Adam until Noach, and they were machisim uboim. They were continually angering HaKadosh Baruch Hu, degenerating, deteriorating, until the waters of the Mabul would come and wipe them away. In the first section of Parshas Noach, we're given the diagnosis which to some degree was already given in the end of Parshas Bereishis. We're told about Noach, Noach's uniqueness, why Noach is chosen, and Noach is given the basic charge that he should make for himself a teva, he should build for himself such an ark in order, through building it, through creating it, to reconstruct the world, to make it possible that something will be salvaged, something good will be salvaged from the original Bria, from the original creation, in order to recreate, so that a new world would be able to come out. Noach is going to preside over exactly that. Preside, I don't know if it's the right word. Participate in exactly that, the destruction of the original Bria, of the original world, and its replacement by a new Bria, by a second world. Now, Noach is complex. Noach, the person, is complex. The story is complex. Rashi expresses this complexity at the beginning of the parasha. The pasuk says, Noach is tzadik tamim haya b'dayraisa. Noach was a righteous person, tamim haya. Tamim, we usually translate even as perfect, b'day raisav, in his generation. He was certainly the best of his time. That's why he was chosen. But it says b'day raisav, in his generation. So there's a famous Rashi. It says Rashi, some interpret that l'shevach, and some interpret that l'gnai. Some interpret that positively and some negatively. Some interpret it positively and say, Noach, with those kind of peers, with those kind of contemporaries, with all that rotten stuff going around, and still he was good. Imagine if he had a supportive environment, how great he would have been. V'yesh darshim lignai, and some interpret it in the opposite direction. And they say, yeah, in the next generation he was considered a tzaddik. But had he been in the generation of Avram, lo nechshav l'klum, wouldn't have been considered like anything. He was a relative tzaddik. That's your first taste, so to speak, of the ambiguity of Noach, of how he was or how he wasn't. We have, Rashi continues, Chazal speak about the contrasts that exist between Noach and Avram. Esa lekim esalech Noach. Noach walked with the support of Hashem. Right? Avram Avinu walked on his own. He didn't need that kind of support. Noach didn't save his generation. In the Haftarah, we refer to, HaKadosh Baruch Hu refers to what happened as the waters of Noach, Kimei Noach Zaisli, as if Noach's flood. Why is it Noach's flood? Say Chazal, Noach somehow should have prevented it. Should have davened. He should have done something, as we will see a little bit more, to make it that these waters didn't come. He's culpable on some level. Whereas Avram Avinu is great, right? He saves the world in his time with similar deterioration. But Klal Yisrael, the world comes out, survives because of Avraham Avinu's potential, his ability, not his potential, his capacity to turn things around. So, Noach is a tzaddik. He's tamim b'day raisav. We're all here because of him. Right? He was the righteous man of his generation who rebuilt the world. But there were successes in the life of Noach, and there were things which weren't quite successes. And I'd like to try to explore with you here tonight a little bit is one aspect of this. One aspect of this which is a significant piece of the puzzle here of Noach, of the story, of the possibilities of Noach, and of what happens, what ends up happening in the story. And in a sense, I think that this nekuda, that this point, is one which precedes Noach. It postdates Noach. It's a matter of fundamental perspective that would be carried with us all the way through. So let's try to look at it a little bit. We'll try to look at the psukim a little bit more closely and to note what we need to note. Batishaches oretz lifnehu elokim. And the land was destroyed. That's the way we would normally translate batishaches. Now, what's that a description of? Batishaches oretz lifnehu elokim. Oh, you would imagine maybe that's some kind of a description of the world ravaged by the waters of the Mabul. Nope. There hasn't been one raindrop falling on anybody's head yet. Batishaches oretz lifnehu elokim is a description of the world, quote-unquote, destroyed before the Mabul. We would normally translate Batishaches in this pasuk as, and the world was corrupted lifnehu elokim. It's the description of the moral privation which existed at this point in time. Batimoleh haaretz chamas. The earth became filled with, again, with corruption, with theft. And Elohim saw the land, and behold, it was destroyed, or it was corrupt. Every type of flesh had destroyed, had corrupted its ways. Nobody, nothing was behaving right. So what does Hashem say to Noach? Kates kol basar balafanai. The end of all flesh has come before me. Because look at the chamas. The land is filled with chamas from these people, filled with theft. V'hinini mashchisam esaretz. And behold, I will destroy them with the land. Here Hashem makes the declaration, I will destroy them. Now I will corrupt them. But again, a different turn on the term hashchasa. And the pasuk is not doing it as a casual thing or as a nice play on words, or got used to typing mem shin ches saf. It's a deliberate use of the same term to speak about an inner rot, one which is completely non-physical, something which is the corruption of the generation which makes the world fundamentally destroyed inside, and on the other hand, the hashchasa, the destruction, the ravages of the Mabul, what Hashem would ultimately bring. And in a sense, what this describes, what we mention sometimes, is this is very much like what Chazal tell us when the Goyim destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. And they were proud of themselves. See, we were able to knock down the house of the Rabbi Neshalem. And the expression which Chazal say, which the Gemara says, is Kimcha Techina Tachan. You took flour that was already ground up and you put it in the mill to grind. Unnecessary. It's already ground. It's already milled. Right, you see flour coming out of the unit and say, wow, look at this flour I produced. You didn't produce it. It was flour when it went in and it was flour when it came out. What are they saying is that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed before you laid a finger on it. If the Beis HaMikdash was the Beis HaMikdash, if it had the presence of Hashem in it, if it had its true strength, you couldn't lay a finger on it. You couldn't do it. The reason why you had the power to destroy it, why you had the power to destroy it, is because, unfortunately, we had destroyed it already. We had compromised its inside, its neshama, its essence, and therefore it was ripe for destruction. What we have here in the story of Noach is the very same thing. Hashem destroys a destroyed world. And we talk about inner strength and inner structure, and we talk about outer strength and outer structure. And they both, right, they're, so to speak, simultaneous existence on two tracks. Which one is the real world? Mashanir Eleinayim, what's seen to the eyes, of course, is the outer world. The world functions. Nah, great economy, everything was going on, fantastic. But there was nothing there. The ability to be able to see this and to be able to really understand and go back and forth between these two perceptions, realities of the world, is the beginning, I think, of what we have to talk about here when it comes to the issue of Noach. Of Noach and what's happening, and what's happening within his generation. That's note number one. Note number two. For note number two, we go to the end of Parshas Bereishis. Then the Parshas Bereishis, the Torah lists the 10 generations from Adam until Noach. And it begins to describe what we have as Perek Vav, the further deterioration leading up to the Mabul. But it has already, in the end of Perek Hay, introduced us to Noach. Vayichi Lemach Shtayim Ushmeinim Shanim Ashanav Yeled Ben. Lemach lived 182 years, and he gave birth to a son. Vayikra Shmei Noach Lemach, and he called his name Noach, saying, Zeyinach Ameinu Mimaaseinu Umeitzon Yodeinu Min Adama Asher Eru Hashem. This one will bring us change, comfort, relief from our actions, from the pain of our hands, from the earth that Hashem has cursed. Now, there are unique things here in this pasuk. We've had 10 generations, it describes, this one gives birth to a child, tells you the name of the child, doesn't tell you why the child was given the name. Here, Noach's name comes with an explanation. And more than that, even before, it says he lived these many years, Vayeled Ben. Till now, it was Vayeled Es Lemech, Vayeled Es Chanoch. Tells you right away the name of the person. By Noach, it starts with Vayeled Ben. We understand, just practically speaking, of course, here, because the name is going to get a whole speech. Right? So it says he called his name Noach, and this is why. When it's just giving you quickly the information, it tells it to you. But Chazal tell us, no. Noach gets to be called a Ben. Because the word Ben is the root for Binyan, for building. Right? A Ben, a child, is building the family forward. And he was called Ben, Shemimenu Nivna Ha'ilam. Noach wasn't just a child building this family forward. Noach was going to be the builder of the world. Everybody is going to come from Noach. So he gets called by the title Ben. And then he's given this name. And the name is grand. The name says this one is going to bring us relief from everything, from all the pain of our hands in the land which Hashem cursed. A clear reference to when Adam sinned and I ate from the Eitz Hadas, from the tree of knowledge. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, Arur Adam Abavurecha, the land is cursed because of you. You're going to have to work hard, you're going to have to toil to be able to eat from it all of the days of your life. Noach, what they saw somehow in him, in his building of the world, in the potential which lay in Noach, was that he was going to bring them relief from that curse. That somehow all of those difficulties would on some level be reversed by Noach. Noach was going to bring deliverance to a world that had gone down, down, down. The first step down already was met with Arur Adam Abavurecha B'Tzavon Tochlema. We can only imagine how it continued of the Mashchisim Uboim, the Machisim Uboim, those who continually angered Hashem, who continually corrupted the universe. It only got worse. But Noach was the great hope. Noach was the one who was going to turn it around. Did he? Well, yes and no. Noach did. He would be the one to start the world again. But on the other hand, he didn't change this world. So look at Rashi. Rashi, at the end of that parsha, where how Noach would comfort them, would change things, says Rashi. Very interesting. Rashi brings together the words of the Medrash. Till Noach came along, they didn't have plowing tools. There are some references earlier to different things. Lotesh, Kochoresh, Nechoshe, Subarzel. Right? There are different tools, but they didn't really have plowing tools. When they worked the land, imagine working the land without a plow. That would really be the toil of your hands. Noach developed plowing tools. Now that's a relief. And then, continues Rashi, as part of the curse of Adam HaRishon, after it said, you'll eat it b'tzavim with pain, it will produce for you sprout thorns and thistles. You'll plant, you have ideas about what's going to come out. What's going to come out is going to be different and inferior. And that was going on until Noach. When Noach came along, it produced that which was intended. That's what Rashi quotes. V'imei Noach Nacha. In the days of Noach, this stopped. Now, I'd only point out to you that those are two completely different kinds of changes. The change, the second change, the latter change, where it says that till now it would produce the thorns and thistles when he planted wheat, and now it didn't do that anymore. That describes the land going from being non-cooperative, non-respectful of man, not doing what it was supposed to do, the land which to some degree was itself in torment, that's the way the Medrash Rabbah expresses it, and then he gave the land its rest. Now the land could obey, the land could cooperate. You plant something, it will produce it. That's an inherent change. The first change is a superficial change. The earth is still stubborn, there needs to be hard work, but I figured out a way that we don't have to work so hard. I developed a plow, a tool, and that's going to be able to help us get around it. Nothing changed in the inherent relationship between man and earth. No curse has been undone by virtue. No. I came up with a chap. I came up with a trick. You know? It's like coming up with something to treat the symptoms when the core illness is still there. Zeyinachamenu. So we have here really, in a sense, yeah, further ambiguity. Noach helped the world. On the one hand, you see an inherent transformation, an inherent positive change. On the other hand, you see something which is superficial, which is just dealing with the symptom and not with the cause. Dealing with the external change and not with the internal change. There's nothing that Noach could do to the ground to change it. There has to be something about Noach that changes the relationship between man and the ground. In the plow situation, he's just working on the tools, you know, to fix something up. It's a different story. There's a very interesting parallel. You know, Tanakh is a set of parallels. Chazal tell us, Masa Avos Simen Labanim, the actions and the stories of the Avos are an indicator and a pattern established for the children. Sometimes you can see very clearly when you learn Nevi'im, you learn Ksuvim, stories especially, that the story borrows, the language borrows from occurrences in the Chumash. The Chumash itself, especially Chumash Bereishis, which is the main Sefer Yetzirah of the creation of these patterns, create these patterns that play themselves out, sometimes at home, sometimes in specific stories, all over the place. One of the places of interesting parallel, is in the story of Yaina. To the story of Noach. Now, of course, there's a Yaina in the story of Noach. That Yaina is a dove, and this Yaina is a Yaina, the Navi. It's not just a cute little thing. There's a significant meaning to that, right? Not for our discussion right now. At this point in time, both of them find themselves in the middle of a swirl of water, protected in a specific cocoon. He's in a boat. He's in a whale, right? Both of them are in a situation, by the way, just like another little interesting note, just to show the red flag of the parallel is that by Noach, what does it say in our first Aliyah here in Parshas Noach? Noach is called Sayar Tasa Lateva. What does that mean, Sayar Tasa Lateva? So everybody agrees on one thing. Sayar Tasa Lateva is referring to a source of light. But what does it mean? What was the source of light? Says Rashi, Yesh Aymrim Chaloyim. Some say it was a window. Yesh Aymrim, some say Evan Taiva Hamir Lahem. Some say it was a precious gemstone that was so radiant it was fluorescent. It illuminated the boat without a window, without sunlight gleaming on it. I don't know how that happened, but it was such a radiant stone.
the Medrash has exactly the same discussion about Yaina. Yaina, they assume, I don't know what there was to see exactly in the mouth of inside the whale, right? But how did Yaina see in the whale? So the Medrash, the Yalkut, brings two opinions. One says there was a stone that lit it up. And the other one says that there was like a window, I don't know, through the blowhole or whatever it was, I forget exactly. Right? Exactly the same achleikas. There's parallels between these instances. There's parallels between these stories. But of course, in a certain sense, the overriding parallel, the strongest parallel between them is that in both cases we're dealing with a world or a portion of the world, a community within the world, that is very, very corrupt, that is worthy of destruction. Nayach Yaina, excuse me, is supposed to parade through Nineveh and say, Oyd avoyim yoyim b'Nineveh ne'apachas. 40 days, and Nineveh is going to be overturned. Right? 40 days of the Mabul. That's what's supposed to happen. That's what he predicts. Yaina doesn't even want the job because he says, Hashem's never going to bring it. He's never going to destroy Nineveh. And Noach, by the way, right? When did he go into the Teva? He didn't believe it until he saw it. He went in, Mipnei Me'a Mabul, because of the waters of the flood. Says Rashi, he didn't believe that Hashem was really going to destroy it. Right? He thought this was going to happen. Okay, so there are some parallels in the story. A world or a city that's worthy of destruction, that Hashem maybe doesn't want to, he wants to give another chance, but it's worthy of destruction. So I say this to introduce you a piece of Gemara. This piece of Gemara is in the end of the 10th parak of Sanhedrin, end of parak Elohim HaNechnokim. It's a discussion which the Gemara has about Nevuah, right? In these Mishnayos, it's speaking about different people who can sin and merit certain kinds of misas bezd, certain kinds of death penalties. That's what we have here, these chapters in Sanhedrin, which are about the high court, the one that gives misas bezd. So you have here a series of prakim that discuss the different averas that carry death penalty that don't have a volume of Mishnayos, a tractate of their own. So this discussion is about the dinim of a Navi Sheker, a false prophet, a person who prophesizes what they weren't told to say, whatever it is. So it gets into a discussion. It gets into a discussion and about prophecy and changing of the mind. Kadosh Baruch Hu says something to the Navi. Then he wants to reverse it. Will he bring it back? Says the Gemara, Amar Abaye, v'chsiv lo yasa Hashem dovor. It's talking about a specific situation, right? By the Navi of Yeravam ben Avot, the one who was telling him about what he shouldn't do, about the Mizbeach. So Hashem had told the Navi he shouldn't stop anywhere to eat. Then somebody else came along, a false prophet, and said, Hashem came to me and he told me you should come and eat with me. Right? And it was a false prophet and ended up causing a big disaster. So the Gemara says, Hashem won't do something without telling his Navi. Says the Gemara, maybe Hashem, you know, changed his mind and he sent the message. Somebody would tell the other Naviim too. Says the Gemara, V'yayna d'hadri be'v'lo y'ayduhu. Do you understand? Yayna. Hashem came to Yaina, he says, tell Nineveh 40 days and Nineveh is going to be destroyed. Nepach is going to be overturned. And then what happened? Yaina went and he sat outside the city and he watched nothing happen. Hashem didn't tell him. Says the Gemara, so what do you mean that Hashem doesn't change his mind without telling him? Says the Gemara, such a beautiful line. Such a beautiful line. Yaina meikara Nineveh ne'epaches amilei. Says the Gemara, nothing changed. What did Hashem tell Yaina to begin with? He says, in 40 days, Nineveh is going to be turned upside down. Iu lo yada ila taiva ila ra. He didn't know how to read it. There's two ways that Nineveh could be turned upside down. There's one way that Nineveh could be turned upside down, to use the language of the Pasuk, Kimapechas Sedoim V'Amayra. like the overturning of Sodom and Gomorrah, which was utter physical destruction. But tell me something. Somebody visited Nineveh before and after. Before Yonah walked through there. Before he said in 40 days Nineveh will be overturned. Before the king of Nineveh got off of his throne, got everybody to start returning anything which they had ever stolen, declared days of fasting and prayer. Was the same Nineveh? Nineveh wasn't overturned. You know what the word for over, another word for overturning is in English? Revolution. Right? That's the term, that's another word for overturning, is a revolution. A revolution is a destruction. A revolution is a radical internal change. Some, maybe somewhat external too. Maybe yeah, maybe no. Says the Gemara, Yaina, your prophecy was fulfilled. You thought that in order for your prophecy to be fulfilled, Nineveh Nepoches, it had to be that the world would have to, Nineveh would have to go up in smoke. It would have to be physically overturned. No. Nineveh was radically changed. It was overturned. It was revolutionized. Letaiva, in the good way. That's what he missed. He didn't recognize which way, indeed, that was going to happen. As Rashi says, Mashmanami Latayva, Shehoku Masei Meiro Latayva. It could mean in a good way, that their deeds would change from bad to good, they'd be turned around, turned over. Because they did tshuva, the nevuah was fulfilled. And it wasn't a change. It wasn't a change. HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to Noach. And he said to Noach, Aseilucha teva sasei gefer. Make for yourself a teva out of this wood. Says Rashi, again, in our first section of the parsha, Rashi, Tilsheni, Aseilucha teva sasei gefer, Harbe revach v'atzolo lefanov. There are a lot of ways that Hashem could have saved Noach. Hashem had to make him go and build and construct a thing. Maybe he could have made an air pocket in the storm. He could have said, here, there's a cave. Travel half a mile there, make a left and a right, and there's a huge cave. And you can go in there, and you'll be okay. Right? The waters, I'll put up a glass wall, and the waters won't get there. And all the animals will come marching to the cave, just like they came marching to the boat. Maybe you'll have to wait a couple more days to open the window, because instead of being left on a mountaintop, you're going to be in a cave. Why did he have him do this? Lama hitricha bebinyan zeh. Why did he bother him to build the teva? Kidei shiru anshidar amabul isik ba. Kuf chaf shana. How much warning was there for the mabul? We had the end of last week's parsha of Ayuyuem of Meav Esim Shana. 120 years of warning. Noach was told this, according to the way Chazal understand it, before his oldest child was born. He was told this when he was 480 years old, even though the pasuk doesn't sound like that. Right? When you read the sequence in the beginning of the parsha. His first child was born when he was only 500 years old. So they see him working for 120 years. V'shalmai, so they say, Ma'azayislach, what are you doing? What are you building? What's that monstrosity in your driveway? And he says to them, Hashem's going to bring a flood. It's going to destroy the world. Ulai yeshuva. Maybe they'll do tshuva. That's why Hashem had him do it. The mabul was not a sure thing. The mabul was a warning. The mabul was a threat. I will destroy them with the world. But there could be a destruction, a different destruction of this world. A destruction which would be, excuse me for the double negative, but a destruction of the destruction. A destruction of the corruption. Noach doesn't have to take them off in a boat, take himself off in a boat. If he does it, he rebuilds the world in a different way. By being master than b'tshuva. By turning things around. But in a sense, to some degree like Yaina, if the world isn't destroyed, then we haven't seen anything happen. The city was overturned, it was changed. That didn't register with Yaina. And evidently that possibility was not there with Noach either. Zeyin HaChameinu. The change is taking place on a visible level, but not on an internal level. This is a little bit of a different shade. Excuse me. It's a little bit of a different shade of the internal external than we speak about by the machresha, by fixing the plow or making it that the earth is cooperative with his efforts at planting. Right there, we're talking about change on both levels. But Noach seems to some degree in this entire framework to be functioning on that level, on the outside. The world will change physically. It will be destroyed and we will start again. It took Avram Avinu, who 10 generations later found himself in the same situation as Noach, with 10 generations that had degenerated, that were machisim uboim, and Avram Avinu was able to bring the world back. How is he able to bring the world back? He was machzir and b'tshuva. Avram Avinu, when Hashem said, Sodom, they're terrible. If what I hear about Sodom is true, then kala, I'm going to destroy them. And what does Avram Avinu do? He says, no, 1 second, let's see. Is there any goodness in Sodom? Is there anything in Sodom? We don't have to destroy it. Let's turn it around. The opposite. In the case of Noach, excuse me, Hashem is encouraging him to turn the world around, even as he tells him to build the teva. But he builds just the teva. He builds the teva. The potential of Zeyin HaChameinu, the possibilities of change, internal or external, we say, Noach brought us relief from the curse. Is that, excuse me, how you spell relief? By destroying the whole world and starting again? That's Zeyin HaChameinu Mimaseinu Mitzvah Yadeinu Min Adam Asherah Hashem. That's the relief. But when the change, when the transformation is going to be on that level of just fixing the outside, that's the way it is. You knock this one down and you build a new one up. The Yinachameinu, the fullest potential of consolation, of real change, of internal change, is when it takes place on that next level. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is a pattern. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Adam HaRishon. And the Pasuk says, Vayanicheu b'Gan Eden, he placed him in Gan Eden. La'avda u'lashamra, to work it and to preserve it. He had a job. He was going to be the gardener of Gan Eden. He had to make sure that it was tended to, that it would be well maintained. How do you tend to Gan Eden? You need a good hedge trimmer, pruning shears. Say Chazal, La'avda is mitzvah saseh. L'shamra is mitzvah saseh. La'avda l'shamra. His working and his developing of the world. You can look at it on the external. You could look at it on the internal. Both are possible. The real charge was for Adam HaRishon to maintain the inner strength of that which would be, that would preserve Gan Eden. To keep the mitzvah saseh, eat from all the trees of the garden. To keep the mitzvah saseh, don't eat from that. That would preserve Gan Eden. But does anybody know where Gan Eden is? Is Gan Eden preserved? No, it's not. Why? Because Noach went through it with a axe? No. Because he was mevatel the mitzvah saseh. Because he didn't fulfill the mitzvah saseh. So Gan Eden is destroyed. It's gone. It's razed, so to speak. I mean, We speak about a Gan Eden in Shamayim. The Gan Eden down here we don't have anymore. Don't go looking for it, you know, with your Google Maps. It's gone. How did he destroy it? He destroyed it like the Dor HaMabul destroyed the world. The inner, that's where it was destroyed. That's where it happened. That's where it happened. And that ultimately is going to be the difference. Are you going to be Mesakim Klei Machresha? Are you going to fix the tools of the plow to make them stronger and more effective to dig down into the cursed ground and make it a little bit easier? Are you going to change the dynamic so that the land responds, that it's back to the world before the Arur, before the curse? HaKadosh Baruch Hu created human beings, and human beings are different, radically different, radically different than a behemoth, than an animal. We have a lot of things in common, and we have fundamental difference. HaKadosh Baruch Hu put into us a neshama, and that neshama gives us a godliness, a divine quality that makes us above and beyond. What do we do with it? What can we do with it? We can do with it things external, and we can do with it things internal. The neshama, as something which is invisible and intangible, gives us the ability to have an appreciation for things in the world which are by nature invisible and intangible. The Rabbeinu Shel Olam is invisible and intangible. It's not a weakness on Nebuch, we can't see him. Right? That's what Hashem is. Hashem is something which is not just a piece of wood, not a table, a chair, or a cushion. He is something beyond this material experience. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu put in man a neshama to touch those things, to sense those things, to be able to build those things within himself, within the world of love, the l'shamra. That's a capacity a human being has. But you know something? Hashem made us with that capacity. He made us very smart and clever. And we can build skyscrapers, high-speed trains, cellular networks, fiber optic, who knows what else we can do, right? All these fantastic, incredible things that are all visible, tangible. Nothing that it takes the neshama to sense. Maybe something that it takes the human brain to be able to develop. Maybe that aspect of, wow, you're going to be a man, you're going to rule over everything, you're going to be higher than anything else in the world. But when we're doing that, then we're missing that which is really building the world. That's the same stream of thinking that destroys the world. That's the same stream of high-tech thinking of the Tower of Babel at the end of Parshas Noach that represents the further degeneration, the 10 generations from Noach to Avram. Oh, they were doing something only man could do. Getting together, building something high, tall, strong, powerful. But it would be nothing. It would be nothing. To sense and to know the real inner reality. I want to read you a paragraph, or part of a paragraph, from
the Derech Hashem.
From the Derech Hashem of Ramchal, Chelek Dalet Perek Hei, B'Tfilah. Talking about Tfilah, about Davening. He says, Hadayin Baruch Hu Nosan L'Adam L'Deyach Yes Menayik Atzmai B'Olama B'Sechel V'Tfuna. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave man the wisdom to conduct himself in his world with seichel, with intelligence and understanding. Ve'emes hamasa olav liyos mefakech al tzrachav kulam. And he put on him the responsibility to oversee all of his needs, to take care of himself. Ve'inin hazem yusal al shnei shorashim. There are two roots to this. Ha'echad liyokri shel adam mechashivusay. Shidnilei ha'seichel v'adei hazeis liyos mena'al l'satz mekaroi. That's part of the glory of man. Man is given a super level of intelligence to be able to do all of this management. Hashem said, I'm going to make you sophisticated enough that you're going to be able to take care of yourself in outstanding ways. Vasheni, and the second is Liyos le'esek v'olam, likasher binyanav, because Hashem wanted him to have to deal with the material world, and so on and so forth. It gets on to the idea of why man, to some degree, has to be connected to the material world. V'hinei ze be'emes mitzad echad yirida le'olinyana, aval hi yirida mitzareches le'. In a certain sense, of course, it's a descent for him. Man has to get his hands dirty, he has to get involved in physical, material things, but it's necessary. But while it is true that this descent is needed for him, but you have to make sure that it doesn't overcome, that it doesn't become too much. The more he gets enmeshed in the matters of this world, the more distant the light of another world is, and the more vague and faint it is. So Hashem created a remedy for this. How is it that this human being that he created, that has to get involved in the world, that has to work in it in order to be able to produce for himself, to take care of himself, and there are all kinds of positive reasons for him to need to do it, why Hashem designed the world that way? But on the other hand, you get in there and it could be a black hole that you can't get out of. Hashem gave him a tikkun, some way to remedy this. Simple. Before he goes there, he stands before Hashem. And from Hashem he asks for all of his needs. And he casts his burden, his task on Hashem. And this is the initiation, the fundamental, basic initiation of any effort which he makes in the world, is this inner effort to turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu before taking out his fancy set of tools, such that when he finishes that, and he closes his siddur or wraps up his tefillin, and he gets on to the other methods of effort that he's going to do. Lo yikra sheyistabach v'yishtakeh begufnius v'chumius, kimin shekvar hiktim b'tol hakol v'yisparach. It won't happen, or won't be called, that he got lost in the physicality, because he dropped anchor first in tefillin. That's the idea. This is the dynamic, the whole dynamic of life. We are living in a world where we are given so many tools and so much capacity, so much ability in the external. And that's where a lot of our efforts are directed. But we can never lose sight of the fact that at the core, where the real work happens, where the real building happens, where the real la'avdo l'shamra happens, where the real hashchosa, destruction or creation, where that really happens is on a level that nobody can see with simple, regular eyes. So before you pull out the computer, before you pull out the tool set, you pull out the siddur, and you say, okay, I realize I got to work in the inner world first. Adam, Noach, Avram, all the way through, this is the way it has to happen. This is the way it has to happen. Noach had two possibilities. He had a possibility of rebuilding the world by rebuilding it from the inside. Ulai yoshuvu. Maybe they'll change. Maybe they'll undo the destruction of the world. And it won't be necessary. Harbe revach v'tzol l'fav. Hashem could have done things in many, many different ways. And one thing I would just say on this comment of Rashi, maybe two things. Hashem has many ways. One thing clearly is that he wasn't going to do the same. That we, quote unquote, humankind, had to do the same. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Noach, you have to go and build for yourself your way out of here. Whether it would take 120 years or whether it would take 120 seconds, But Nayach would have to do it. You're going to have to build it. Part of that great responsibility which HaKadosh Baruch Hu put in the hands of us, of people, when he created the world, is, okay, I made it, now you take over. Right? I shared with some of you, didn't talk about it in the shir last week here, but you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu shavas on yem hashvi mikom lafei asher bore elikim lasais. He rested from everything that he created to do. What does it mean he created to do? For everything that he created and did. The Medrash asks the question, asher bore elikim va'asa. Why is asher bore elikim lasais? So on one fundamental level of interpretation is asher bore elikim lasais. Right? Maybe we did talk about it a little bit last week, did we? I don't know. That Hashem created things with the capacity to do. He created, and he created man, and he says, and now you, I put the world in your hands. When we destroy the world, we would have to somehow fix it. We would have to recreate it. And so, many ways Hashem could have saved the world. Many ways Hashem could have given Noach the way to save the world. But it wasn't anything that would be a substitute for Noach. He would have to do it. And Noach, given the opportunity to change the world, had the opportunity to save the world, excuse me, by saying, okay, you know what? This is going by the wayside. Let me build another one. I'll build a teva. And then I'll come out of the teva and I'll plant a vineyard. Vayochel Noach, ish va'adam v'yitaker. Noach, the man of the earth, went and he planted a vineyard. He planted a vineyard. He intoxicated himself to a point where he would lose track of any subtlety. A person who's intoxicated can't daven, can't learn Torah, can't do avoda in the Beis HaMikdash, can't judge. Idea is lost. That's one option. Build the world that way. And the other option is build your world the other way. The Mabul is a tragedy of biblical proportions. The ultimate, the definitive tragedy of a world that has to be destroyed. And since then, HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised, no, I'm not going to destroy the world. The path out of it, the force out of it, was an Avram who would also take it upon himself and fix the world internally. It doesn't have to be fixed. So it doesn't have to be broken down and put back together. This is what's happening here. Hineni mashchisam es ha'aretz. I'm going to destroy them because of what they already destroyed. They robbed the world of its inner life, of its inner strength. So I'm going to destroy it on the outside. If we can only rebuild the inside, if we can only live with an awareness of that it's all revolving around the inside, it's a different story. Then it's a different story. To keep it together. I just want to conclude with one last thought on this. To be a little less esoteric and a little bit more, quote unquote, real and practical. Inner worlds sounds like something very mystical, spiritual. Chazal famously point out that Leinechtam Zardinam Elo Alagezel, also a Rashi in the beginning of our parsha. All kinds of things went wrong in the time of Noach. They did all kinds of affairs. Terrible spiritual failings of Avedazar and everything else. But however, the Pasuk says, when Hashem speaks to Noach, I'm going to destroy them, he points out just one sin. Because of the chamas, the stealing, whatever, the extortion. Says Rashi, after all is said and done, what sealed their fate was stealing. Chazal say, famous Rashi, at the end of Parshas Noach, where it speaks about the Tower of Babel and says, well, why didn't Hashem destroy them? It's because they were cooperating with each other instead of stealing from each other.
a world that breaks down. We talk about the internal breakdown, the external breakdown. The most basic notion of internally holding a world together is shalom. It's people working with each other. It's not people stealing from each other and stabbing each other in the back. That was the real inner world that had to be created. That's also an old story, an old biblical story. Cain and Hevel, right? From the very beginning, two members of a world, two brothers, killing each other, fighting with each other. That's the destruction. That's how the world comes apart. That's the hashchasa before the hashchasa. Yes, it's on many levels, moral areas, religious areas. We talk about the internal, putting it together, making the world work, the first level. The same way it was the ultimate seal of destruction, it is the ultimate tool of construction, of putting it back together. What did Avram excel at? Yeah, sure, he taught people about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but where did it start? It started with Avram Avinu being Machnes Erech, welcoming a guest, bonding people together with his midah of chesed, of kindness to one another, the opposite, the antithesis of gezel. That's what it is, putting a world back together or having a world fall apart. Yes, we can talk about tefillah and that kind of a sensitivity to an internal world. But first and foremost, the story of the beginning of Parshas Noach, the story of the onset of the Mabul, of the disaster of the Mabul, of that which was not averted but ended up having to happen, was all of these things that were there that were happening within the world, at the core of the world, that caused the rot, that made destruction just a formality. Kimcha techina techanta. Awareness of, instead of our constant focus on the outside visible things, of how we can always address them and improve them, those are the symptoms. That's like Noach developing a tool for the plow instead of developing a way for the earth not to be cursed anymore. So we need to address it on every subtle level, on every invisible level. But as theirs was sealed with shalom, ours should begin with shalom.
Not sure for the